You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So this, you guys, is the 73rd, if I'm counting correctly, episode that I've recorded of The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Very much fun for me. I'm going to introduce you in this episode to Angel Rohde. And this is a story that might actually stick with you for a little bit. It's a story that starts out like it feels like it's going to go in one direction and be about one thing. But as we get through it, there turn out to be a few more layers. And as you listen to the interview, you'll probably actually hear me and be able to pick up on where I am figuring out the different layers and pulling them apart for myself as the interviewer. Angel shares her story with me of a journey through an unexpected relationship upheaval. It's a breakup that left her far from home and in pretty challenging circumstances. And at the start of our conversation, that's actually all I knew. Actually, that's not true. I knew that she considered the decision she made as a part of this to be some of the best in her life. And that's all the details I had when we started. After we ended the conversation, I actually reflected on how much fortitude and grit was involved for Angel to make the shift that she did and to go through this experience the way she did. And as you listen, I think you might find yourself asking yourself, like, as you listen, could I actually do this for myself if I needed to? So that's something to think about. We also, because it's me, we talk about cheese curds, snow globes, and Craigslist. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do this. Angel Rohde, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Hello. Hi. Well, happy to be here.
Yay. All right. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I am so ready.
Awesome. I begin every interview by asking my guests where they call home. So where are you located?
I am exactly in the middle of the country. Well, a little bit north. I'm in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yes.
Home of cheese curds.
It is.
That's right. That's right. I used to have a coworker who would bring cheese curds into work, and they make this squeaky sound when you chew on them.
Squeaky cheese. It has a gravitational pull of its own, and that's why people live here despite the weather. It's the curds.
I thought it was the football, but okay, we'll go with that. The cheese curds and football. All right, so I'd love to learn a little bit more about you before we get to the topic of the day. I love to ask people about something that's not their family, something that's not their job, a passion, something that brings them a joy, a hobby. Share something with us about you that you're willing to share on the podcast.
I love collecting and refurbishing snow globes. I have over 1,000 of them. Some vintage, some exotic from places, some just ridiculously large for a snow globe. And I love refilling them, fixing them, repainting them, relighting them if they're lit, and just looking at them. They give me joy. They're kitschy, and they are reminders of places I've been or places I'd like to be or just my youth. And I love them.
That's fantastic. I never even knew that was a thing. I would have thought... Yeah. No, I did not know that refurbishing a snow globe was something that people did, but I absolutely love it. I bought a snow globe for my college basketball team just this year because it's kitschy. It works as like a bookend. Yes. It's fun. It's like a knickknack and a toy all in one.
It's all the things.
I'm all in, but I never, if mine broke, I would just throw it away.
Oh, see, no.
I didn't know that it could be. Exactly.
Call me
now
if
I
it
know.
Breaks.
Now I know that they can be fixed. There we go. All right. So now to get to the topic that you proposed, what we're talking about today is the abrupt end of a relationship that left you broken, homeless, 2,000 miles away from everybody you knew. Does that sound like something you want to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's do it. So I'm going to back you way up to way before even the breakup, because before we talk about the breakup, I want to talk about the start, like the beginning. So I think it helps. I think it helps to understand the beginning, right? So how did you and whoever this other person is, how did you meet? How did you fall in love? Like, tell us the beginning story.
Well, we met in the fifth grade. We went to grade school together, and I actually had a crush on his older brother at the time, and we were a thing. And when you're a thing in grade school, it means you pass notes. So it was that. And then his family moved to another state. My family moved away for a bit, and we kind of lost contact. And this family has a very distinctive name, both their first and their last names. And when this guy popped up in my Facebook feed as someone that I might know, I thought, oh, I wonder how his brother was doing, my first love, you know? So I just reached out and said, hey, I don't know if you remember me. We were in the fifth grade together. I was going to warm up with that and then later lean into how is your brother. And he wrote back just so excited and grateful that I remembered him because he felt invisible in grade school that I never had the heart to ask him how his brother is. And that's fine. We just started talking. So that's how it started, a reconnection on Facebook from a grade school.
This is like before the comment section and the message section of Facebook was taken over by, you know, people who were trying to sell us stuff back in the days. Yes. When we were reconnecting. I think the reconnecting with friends, it's still really good for that, actually. I like it. Facebook gets a lot of negative stuff, but I think it's can be a very, very handy tool for reaching out to people. It's like basically my address book these days.
Same. Yeah. I love knowing how all of my high school friends are doing, and I can look at them all at a glance. I can reach out to them at a glance. I really do like it for that. I like to think that what you seek, you will find. And if you look for the bad stuff or only think about the bad stuff, all you see is the bad stuff.
Oh, sure. And that's what the tools are designed to do, which is why, you know, I have my social media feeds finely tuned to serve me funny videos of adorable animals and silly jokes. And anytime there's something big that happens, I mean, you can't avoid all of the news, but anytime there's something big that happens, I like spend a lot of time like, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. But it sometimes works against you. Like if you watch, I sometimes wonder what the gremlins in like the technology actually think. Like, so like years ago when I was like watching like the Narcos TV show and I was like Googling that stuff and I was like, I wonder what somebody, if anybody's trying to figure out what's going on in my life, like, what do they think? Cause it's like one minute I'm like, how do you make macaroni and cheese? And the next I'm like, did this actually happen in, you know, the drug trade or like, you know,
this is something that I find adorable about myself. I mean, other people, when they Google, you know, how to do a thing, and then ads for that thing start showing up in their Facebook, it kind of freaks them out. My brain goes, oh, that's so convenient.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I really appreciate it when I travel and they're like, hey, if you want Mexican food near your hotel. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Thank you very, very much for knowing where I am so I don't have to figure it out. I do. I definitely appreciate it. And I agree. I think that it can be really good. On the other hand, sometimes if you look for something and you're a crafts person, and so sometimes I like Google some, you know, random part and then I'm getting ads for that store that I'm never going to shop at ever again. I just have to live through it. I bought my one thing from you and now I'm moving on. All right. So this is a relationship that started. You guys were family-ish friends, like early school friends. You reconnect online.
Yeah.
How long? So you shift from being acquaintances and friend of the brother to a relationship. How long were you guys together in a relationship?
A couple of years. But he's a pilot, so it was you know sporadic pieces. It wasn't. Although he was pretty much based at my place, but he would fly for, you know, 5 days or so and then come back. But okay. A couple of years.
How did you end up 2000? How did you move? How did this happen where you ended up moving 2000 miles away from everybody? How did that happen?
Well, he first asked me to marry him and then told me that he had an opportunity to be based in Seattle and to fly internationally. Would I move from my home to Seattle with him? And at first I thought, well, I have a kind of a life built up here in Seattle and I'm as a musician and things, I have a persona here that will go away if I move to another part of the country. But it's a sign, I thought, because my daughter lived in Seattle with her young family and she was just starting to have kids and I thought it's a sign. I want to be near my grandkids as they grow up. So I sold my house for less than it was worth and quit my job and
So you
moved.
moved to Seattle. Okay. So you relocated to Seattle. So, all right. So you're together for a couple of years. He asks you to marry him. Do you guys get married or you don't get married?
No, we're just planning big
Okay.
wedding in France.
Nice.
Yeah,
Was it a
yeah.
romantic proposal? Like,
It
was it?
was, yeah, it was. He was taking me away for a little romantic weekend and walked in the hotel room and there were petals everywhere and music was playing and I love Scrabble. I love Scrabble. And he had a little Scrabble game and he said, "Let's play." And I opened up the game and it was, "Will you marry me?" was spelled out on the Scrabble board and I turned around and he was there. He had a little speech. Yeah, it was
Nicely
romantic.
done.
It was well
Actually,
done.
yes, I give point. There's a lot of thought in there, writing it out, the
Yeah.
Scrabble, the flowers. Very nicely done.
Yeah.
I can
Yeah.
see the appeal. Proposals are fun. Proposals are
Proposals
fun.
are great.
Yeah. They're a little less work than marriage. All right. So then you guys are together. What is going on and what happens that you realize that you need out of this relationship?
It wasn't my realization, but he, looking back, there was textbook narcissism things going on as far as separating me from my family and not wanting me to have contact with people that were not him and all this sort of stuff. So we moved to Seattle, and I was under the assumption that his marriage was already done and broken up.
He had been married before.
Yes, turns out the before part wasn't so much a thing. They were still married. And but now that we were moving, he had started the process and his wife was not being very emotionally generous. And so he was really angry all the time. And I didn't quite understand what at because I wasn't a part of that story. So I didn't know why he was. I just thought I need to be nicer. We never really fought. So it's not like I saw a breakup coming. And so yeah, moved to Seattle and am I jumping ahead too far? So yeah,
No,
that's how we.
I think that's it. So yeah, so you move, so you're in Wisconsin, you move to Seattle. You find out that there's more to this story than meets the eye. The person you thought was unattached is still attached. You get a little bit embroiled in the drama of his de-entangling his previous relationship. Things start to get a little bit dicey between you guys. He breaks up, you break up. There's a
Well, there was
mutual
even
breakup.
more to that story than I
All
was
right,
aware.
keep
Not only
going.
was there a well, not only was there a former, there was somebody else he just met.
Oh
And
my goodness.
here's where the story gets really interesting.
I thought it was interesting already.
when I quit my job in Wisconsin, they asked if I would do it freelance, and that would entitle being my own small business. And as an artist at the time, I was thinking, I don't know if I'm comfortable. I got a degree in drawing stuff, not in
Right.
business. He said to me, "I have a degree in business. I will manage that part of it. We will be partners." Awesome. So we move into this place, and 3 to 5 weeks after we move there, I go into his email because I needed the business license he had just registered for because I needed that number to do something else with it, and saw a bunch of emails to this new lady where he was claiming that he was just moved to Seattle by himself and he's living the Seattle life. And I'm like, wow.
Wow.
So he comes home from mailing a letter and I have this look on my face and he's like, "What? What?" I'm like, so his reaction to my finding out was to give me 2 weeks to find somewhere else to live.
Wow. Okay, Angel. Okay, wow. All right. So he tells you have 2 weeks to find someplace else to live. All right. So you describe yourself when you pitch this, you said, and I said this before, so I'm repeating what I said before, 2,000 miles away, that's Wisconsin to Seattle. And broke and separated from everyone you knew. You're new to Seattle, so that part makes sense. Tell us more about, like, you're in a new city. Like, tell us about being broke, having the two weeks. Like, how broke were you? You've got like this freelance gig. Like, tell us more about this.
Well, like I said, I sold my house for less than it was worth because we were in a hurry to leave town. And I couldn't just get a job. Doing my last job freelance was piecemeal. They'd pay me per project that I did, but it wasn't necessarily full-time money. And I couldn't get a job in my field as a graphic artist because the business model in Seattle is different than it is in the Midwest. In Seattle, which is the home of Microsoft and Amazon and Facebook, they contract all of their workers and all of their artists. They contract you for 6 months. If they like you, they will contract you for another 6 months, but you have to have your own equipment and your own programs. I had a great big land computer. I did not own a laptop, so I could not
Okay.
get a job. I had to do everything freelance. And again, I am there with, I don't know anybody there except
Right,
my
you don't have a
daughter.
network, right?
And my daughter and her young family were four people in a two-bedroom apartment. So they didn't really have room for me, but she said I could sleep on her couch till I find something else. People back home were like, come and stay in my spare room while you look for another job. And I thought that feels like a step backwards. It has cost me a lot emotionally to be here. I'm going to stick it out and figure out why the fates put me here.
All right, so
And
yeah, like that, and you put this on the form, which is an interesting point. We're getting close to the finish line of this story, but many people go through breakups, and I've told these stories. But you, how long were you in Seattle, like before this happened, like before you?
3 to 5 weeks.
That is so fast. You didn't even know your way around the grocery store
I
yet.
wasn't even moved
So,
in yet. I hadn't even finished
right.
unpacking the boxes yet.
No, I mean, of course not. No, that takes a long time. Okay, so. You choose to stay, and you said in your pitch, you were like, this, you consider this one of the best choices you've ever made. So that's quite a pivot. So walk me through, if you can, why you, like you mentioned, you were like, I'm gonna, you clearly have a connection to like an energetic thing. Like, then why did the fates put me here? But walk me through like making this decision and going from WTF am I gonna do to this was great.
Well, the emotions I was going through, well, back up even further. I grew up in a bit of a dysfunctional and alcoholic home, like one out of four people. And so
I was gonna say, like, Yes.
and so I had a lot of imposter syndrome, abandonment issues. So I didn't have any real close connections with anyone really, because I thought, oh, I've got this really cool outer exterior, but if I let you in, you're going to see the socially unacceptable weirdo that lives behind the cool wall. So I didn't let anybody in there, which led to a lot of don't, you can't fire me. I quit in friendships, much less relationships. I just kept people here. And when you don't let people in, it's just not sustainable. It feels like a lot of work for everybody, right? And the fear of abandonment. Came from, my parents' marriage broke up early. My mom wasn't good with money, so we moved every 2 months. My biggest fear in life was living in a cardboard box, right? Then what happens? All my greatest fears happened at the same time. I
This
am,
is the universe
right?
tour. This is the two by four. This is the two
This
by
is
four.
the two
If you don't
by
pay
four.
attention, here comes the two by four. So,
Exactly
yeah.
that.
Okay, so and were you aware of some of these things? Were you aware that you had some so overly self-reliant, that's how the abandonment shows up, right? Like I'll do it first, right? Fiercely fear. Were you aware of that before this started? Like you were already knew that about yourself?
Yes, I would say I was very self-actualized about my baggage. No desire to work on it. Is that true? Gosh, I guess it is.
Okay. All right. So, but your daughter, you have a daughter who's an adult. All right. So
And a
you're,
son,
you, and a son. So you've got some life experience. Can't have been easy to talk to your daughter and be like, sure, I'll sleep on your couch for a little while because I don't even have my feet under me in this new city.
So because, you know, I thought, well, I'll stay on her couch because I have to, but I won't get any work done. I have to work freelance. I won't get any work done with two cute little grandbabies running around. So I'm going to find someplace else to work that I can afford. And there are a lot of artists' spaces available for rent in Seattle. Sales.
Creative spaces. Yeah.
Creative spaces. You rent a, you know, 4x10 or something place big enough to put an easel in.
Yep.
And the place that I went to look at actually had been a fisherman's warehouse back in the day. It was right on Lake Union. And the space that they had available had been the office. So it had a pedestal sink and a toilet in it. And I thought, I can squat here. So I never actually stayed on my daughter's couch. I just moved into the space. The walls didn't even go all the way up to the ceiling. So I would work really loudly during the day, say goodbye to my artist friends and leave and sneak back in. And then I told everybody I lived in the Anne Frank Hotel because at night I would keep the lights off and I'd be very quiet and pretend that I wasn't there. Turns out everybody
knew. I was going to say, did you get caught? Did everybody know? Did they care?
Caught? I guess so. Well, when I moved out, I wrote a long letter to the guy that owned the building, thanking him, telling him, because I know he had issues with squatters before, but I was pretty sneaky and clean about it. And he said he knew, and he knew that I needed the leg up. And so he never said anything. And man, what a gift. What a gift that was.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that's an interesting part of the story. So you didn't actually sleep on the couch, but instead you slept on the floor in your loft, your artist space, which, I mean, that's not super easy either. You must have been really, really on edge and motivated to make some changes.
Yeah, and it started with why I must be just entirely rejectable as a human, because who does that? We didn't even fight. It's not like we were even a bad couple. And you know what I mean? I'm like, how? I
must be so rejectable. So you turn the lens on yourself.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. And so how does it shift to you? So, because this is a rapid change, right? Like, I want to just reflect for everybody, like, because I just drew this. You sold a house in Wisconsin. So within a couple months, you go from being in a house that you own with like a mortgage and so on and so forth to 2,000 miles away, sleeping on the floor, keeping it a secret in a creative space. That's a massive change. So you internalize this, you're making it about yourself. That hurts my heart. So tell us how you switch that around.
Craigslist. Like I said, I didn't.
That was unexpected. Okay, Craigslist. All right, got it.
I didn't know anybody there. So any gigs that I was going to get and was going to be Craigslist.
Okay.
So three things happened from Craigslist. The first thing was in exchange for laying out an instructor's manual, I got a job. I got a year's membership at a hot yoga studio, a very swanky one in downtown Seattle that had showers and Aveda products.
So now you have a place to shower and do self-care. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Craigslist. Second thing that happened was a really great gluten-free bakery needed signage and menus and other graphic things. And in exchange, they gave me a gift card for their establishment that they just kept loading money on as I would do things for them. And that fed me.
Oh my gosh. This is hustle. Okay.
This is hustle.
This is hustle.
But also I really believe the world takes care of you but also hustle. Yeah.
No, because I mean, it definitely, the world takes care of you and things will manifest, but there was always the choice to like not do it. Like you could have sat on the couch and played with the grandparents and grandkids and done the other things. So
felt bad about myself. Yeah.
Yes. And so right now when we're doing this, when we're having this conversation, White Lotus is a popular show that's streaming, and this really funny clip of one of the characters is like, at this age, I don't think that I can be uncomfortable. Like this middle-aged person, she says, I don't think I can be uncomfortable at this age. But you went the other way. You were like, no, I'm doing it. So can I ask roughly what year was this that you were on Craigslist doing these things? Because I feel like
2011.
Okay. I don't even know. I haven't been on Craigslist in a really long time. So I don't
been
even
on
know
since.
Right. So, but yeah. I mean, it was always a little bit iffy, but it was a way we connected with people for freelance gigs for sure. And you can
I
get
want
anything.
To give you the third one quick.
Give me the
because
third one,
it's
right.
the biggest
third one.
One.
Okay.
So the third thing was I started getting junk mail from a local Buddhist temple that was within a mile of where I was squatting. And I went there at night and there weren't any programs going on or anything, but there's a young man in the gift shop and I walk in and he said to me earnestly, "Can I help you?" And I started bawling. And he's like, "You're okay. You're okay." And he hugged me. So Buddhism is the third thing that came to me. And the answer to why me is it doesn't matter why. Here yeah. you are. And that was the life-altering thing besides so I was able to be grateful for the things that the world was showing to me. And like you said, you got to buy a lottery ticket to win the
yes,
lottery.
You got to
right?
be in it to win it.
Got to be in it to win it. And so those three things just, and I instantly forgave that guy. He can't help it. That's his personality. It wasn't personal. And that was such a, kept me from being up nights thinking harmful self-harming thoughts, right?
Yeah.
Because that was a thing. And just to be in the moment and what can I do right now? And here I am right now. And the reason I'm so grateful that all of this happened to me, Amy, is because everything that I thought was the scariest thing that could happen to me all at once. And not only did I not die, I'm bulletproof. You can put me down in the middle of anywhere on the planet and I am going to be just fine. And within a short amount of time, my world didn't build up looking the same as it did in the Midwest. I wasn't a musician in Seattle, but I became a comedian of all things.
Okay.
So still in the entertainment world. So, right. So everything that I thought was fake about me, I'm like, oh, I guess I am an entertainer. I am these things. I am these things because I'm still the same. I'm without the stuff that I thought I had built up in an imposter way was there. I am so solid. I am so grateful to that guy.
So then when you get involved at the Buddhist temple, does this mean mm-hmm. that you begin to go and do yeah. the classes yeah. on meditation and acceptance and allowing and
all
Buddhists take that is, they take it to a whole new level. Like I listen to Tara Brach, who writes a lot about Buddhist teachings. I think she's a wonderful teacher about radical acceptance, but I she's better at it than I am. And I see it and I admire it and I see it as a goal, but sometimes I think the Buddhists are better at it than I am. And I strive for it.
It is just like other things that are a practice, like yoga. It is a practice.
Yeah.
And if you back away from it for a while, yeah, I got to build back up to it again. So that is a thing. That is a thing.
100%. So how long are you living? How long are you squatting in your creator space?
I'm going to say a year and a half. And the
wow.
reason it was so long is because a few months after getting there, I had a thing called intussusception. I don't know if you know what that is. It's common in dogs and babies, but not common in adults. And it is where your intestines
They fold in on each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
wait, did you end up in the hospital and have to have surgery?
Yeah. Like after 4 days of not even keeping water down, I thought I had the flu. I didn't have insurance, of course. So I just thought I had the flu, so I was going to sit and wait it out. And after 4 days, I could feel things starting to shut down. So I went to the hospital, and they're like, you were probably hours away from expiring.
Yeah, because
so
you
need water.
Right, your intestine like digests itself because it folds
yes,
over.
Yes,
and
it eats itself.
Yes,
exactly
I did not know the word for it, but I do know somebody that happened to. So, I talk to a lot of people. I accumulate a lot of stories. but I did not. I would not have come at that. So you a year and a half. So in the beginning yeah. of this, so you get really super sick. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine where your mindset was at that point. Like you mentioned that you got to a point where you were actively thinking about self-harm. And I think that sometimes it's hard for people to imagine that. But with this set of circumstances stacking up, I think that most of us can imagine that this was a bleak bleak part of your life. You've got two kids, you're an established adult, and you find yourself squatting and then sick in the hospital with nowhere to go.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot. It was a lot. So you're there for a year and a half, which makes more sense how he caught on to the fact that you were there, because that would be a hard secret to keep for a year and a half that you were living there. You're showering at the yoga Pilates studio. Thank you to them. Eating from the gluten-free bakery. Studying with the Buddhists. So now you're back in Wisconsin.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you become a comedian. Give us the highlight of how this transfer, like how you forgive this guy, but I hope also you say, I don't actually need to hang out with him anymore.
No. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Goodbye. And so you're going through this process a year and a half. Do you move out of the creative space into and back to Wisconsin, or what happens?
Nope. Well, the longer you don't have an address, the less likely somebody will give you a lease to live somewhere, right?
Oh, sure, because you don't have an address, yeah.
Yeah. So, when I finally started to be a thing. The housing that I eventually found was actually an artist's residency in Seattle. Seattle gives back to the arts in three different ways in Seattle. 1% of Seattle's income goes to the arts. They support public works of art, and they have grants and things for shows and things. And also they have housing so that artists don't have to have second jobs if they are contributing to the arts, either as a poet, an actor, a dancer, or whatever.
God,
and
that's
so it's just amazing. Yeah. And so these are big industrial lofts, and I applied to get in, and they really wanted to talk to my landlord. I didn't have it because I used my daughter's address, and my name isn't on the lease or anything. So I finally had to come clean to the people that I, and they were fine. They were so good and kind. I don't know if every landlord would have been, but in this place, in this situation, they were really kind.
That's amazing. So you move into a residence for artists. When do you pick up comedy?
Actually, within a couple of months of moving to Seattle, I was missing home. So I would go and watch the Green Bay Packers at a local
bar.
Packers bar. There's one everywhere. And got to know a young man who actually had just moved from Milwaukee to Seattle to open a Comedy Sports. Are you familiar? It's a franchise that it's like Whose Line Is It Anyway, only with two teams and a referee.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It's amazing. I'm so biased. It's awesome. Okay. They just play comedy as if it is a sport. So he had just moved there within 2 months that I had moved there. He also didn't know anybody there. So we became instant best friends, and I started doing comedy with Comedy Sports. And from that, I also started doing stand-up. As a musician, I write parodies about menopause.
Okay.
So that's what I did. Yeah. That's
how
the comedy.
How long did you stay in Seattle?
14 years. 14 years?
13 or 14 years. And
yeah,
why did you decide to move back to Wisconsin?
During the pandemic, I was binging the Gilmore Girls like you do. And I was thinking,
as one does. Okay.
I wish I lived in a cute little town where everyone knows the postman. I grew up in that town. And I did. And not
you got
long
homesick.
After. Yeah. And I would come back to visit, and I would stay with my aunt, who had a couple of free extra bedrooms in her place, because I would stay for a month at a time. And she was telling me about the young man that was moving in upstairs from her place. And I said, hey, if he ever moves out, let me know, because she wasn't charging a lot of money for rent. It was like a quarter of what I was paying for downtown Seattle. And like a couple of years later, 2021 or so, 2022, somewhere in there, she said, hey, he's got a condo. Do you want the space? I said, yes. And then I hung up and I thought, what did I just do? I've built up this big business in Seattle now. Ah, what did I just do? And I thought, I can afford both. So for 2 years, I drove back and forth as the wind would blow me every few months or so,
Okay.
2,001 miles door to door with my cat. And
They're such good travelers in the car,
oh my
cats.
gosh, she's so good.
Is she good?
So
Oh, I was making a
she,
joke
no, yeah,
because
no, she's
she is good.
awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, loves it. She loves it. So
Very good.
sometimes I would take 28 hours and drive I-90 and get there in 2 audiobooks. And sometimes I take 2 weeks and go south and hit every national park or Route 66. I did that for like a year and a half, almost 2 years. And then I was in Seattle in 2023 and thought, I was wishing I was in Wisconsin. So my grandkids there now are 18 and 15. And my
Okay.
grandkids here, my son is still in Wisconsin. His kids are 4 and 5. And I thought, oh, I got to watch those two grow up. Now I get to watch these two grow up. So that's why I migrated back here. My
Migrated
work
back.
is all virtual though, so I can be anywhere. So I do travel a lot because I can and just do my thing from wherever I am.
So one of the things that I love about your story, which is not actually about your story, but that has come up in my mind while you were talking about it, is that a lot of people feel like they are committed to the path of their life when their kids, they raise their kids and they're committed to their career. And there's a lot of fear and apprehension about changing. But you really went through a 100% overhaul
Yeah.
at that point. You moved cities, you changed, you reset completely, like starting over a lot of hardship. You changed careers, you changed friend groups, all of those
Yeah.
things, and our full reinvention. That's very inspirational.
Yeah, and it was unintentional, right? So
Right.
when
It
before I
wasn't what you
left,
planned. It was
was it what I
not, you didn't
planned?
map it out. You mapped out, you were moving there to get married and be with this guy. That's
Exactly,
not what happened.
exactly. Yep. I had said before that when people would say, you should work freelance or be your own boss, I thought, nope, I'm comfortable working 9 to 5 and having a check show up every 2 weeks. I am fine with that
Yeah.
life. And I now it's been what, 14, 15 years, whatever it's been. I am so enthralled with my life, and had I not been forced to make that jump, I don't know that I would have. So that's
Right.
another reason I'm grateful. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I ask you that question. I would not have asked you here because it was totally a force. But sometimes I say, "Hey, do you think you would have made this change if you hadn't been pushed?"
Yeah.
But this does sound like you would not have you wouldn't have elected so many parts of this. You wouldn't have elected to be a squatter in the creative space. You wouldn't have elected to
Right.
get sick. You wouldn't have elected to be, under the pressure. What would you say when you look back and you think about it now that it's all over and things are done? What would you say if you had to pick one thing that was the single hardest part of that 18 months after you got to Seattle, what would it be?
The mental blocks is the hardest thing because that's the thing that doesn't shut off, right? It's the thing that it's not separate from yourself. It's something that's separate from yourself. It's easy to change your mind about.
Okay.
But the thing that the voice that's living inside your head, that was the hardest thing to turn around. And had it not been, and when he's word forced upon me, but kind of forced upon me, I wouldn't have. But I so see the value now, because life does this, right?
Right.
People work really hard to keep it right here, but this is not super. Well, this is not really
Right. There's
sustainable.
no straight line,
There's
no
no straight lining.
constant.
Yeah,
It's
and you
constant. Yeah.
don't appreciate this if you
The
don't have
ebbs and
this.
flows. Yeah.
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 The peaks and the valleys.
Yes.
The
Yeah.
peaks and the valleys. Absolutely. No, I think that's true. And we fear the valleys.
Yes.
I find that sometimes you don't know you're in the peaks and valleys until you look back. I mean, you sometimes do. Sometimes you're aware. You're like, I mean, when you were squatting in the creator space, you probably really knew you were like, this is not a peak. This is not a
Yeah.
high point. But sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you think you're at a high point, and then you look back and you're like, oh my God, that sucked. But yeah, but we make our way through it. So would you say the support you had that was helpful in the moment for the mental stuff was primarily the Buddhist teachings and working with the
Yeah,
temple?
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a thing that took me third person to
Yeah.
look at everything from the outside. Yeah, absolutely. And to stay in the moment and also just take a step back, because when you're in the middle of a fog, the fog can be just this big and
Yeah.
all you see is fog, right? So
Yeah.
taking a step back and looking third person at the thing, you're like, okay, that's going to clear up in a second.
Yeah, the tools of being an observer of your own life, 100%. So, all right. So that is an amazing story. I am not sure that I would be as kind to some of the parts of it if I had lived it, because it sounds like it was really, really hard. But I want to thank you for sharing that as a as an inspiration. I want to, in a minute, we're going to do the final questions, the fun questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about what you do. You said you work online, what you do, how they can find you and connect with you online.
My company's called Brushcapades, and
Like
primarily
icecapades.
like Icecapades, exactly that, only with a paintbrush. Adventures with paint. Yeah, something
Very
like
good.
that. It's my new tagline. It just came up with that. So what I do is twofold. I show people how to paint a thing, but more importantly, I show people that they are an artist and that we are all artists, and it's inherent to what we are. It's important for anxiety and depression and sleeplessness and self-esteem. It's integral to what we are as a creature, and having a creative practice is just super, super important. So
Okay.
giving people that bravery is what I do.
All right. And so Brush Creatives, you describe it as an online creative studio. You host virtual art classes for groups large and small, acrylic painting, watercolor sketching, and caricature drawing. That sounds super fun. For people who are listening to the audio-only version, you don't see this, but she's in her studio. She's got a beautiful, she's got all these paints behind her, acrylic and oil and all kind of fun stuff behind her, and some artwork, some brushes. If you're watching on the video, you definitely see that. We'll put links to Brushcapades in the show notes, and also that, so you'll find that in your podcast player or on YouTube. And if you're a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email newsletter, I send it right to you in your email box. That's the easiest way to get it. All right. So, Angel, are you ready for the final three questions?
So ready.
All right, let's do it just for fun. The idea is you just answer with whatever comes to mind. I think you're going to be good at this. Okay. This is one of the more random questions I've come up with, I have to admit. Okay. Do you use a reusable water bottle? And if so, what's your favorite brand of water bottle that you use?
I do not.
Okay.
I drink filtered water, but I just use a regular glass. I don't
Just
carry
a
around a
regular
bottle.
glass. All right, very good. Very good. Okay, so in your bio, you described yourself as an artist and a comedian. My question for you now is, do you have a favorite contemporary comedian, somebody who you really enjoy who's performing now?
Oh gosh. I'm just a super fan of Kristen Wiig, and just looking at her
Oh yeah.
face makes me just crack up. I love her.
All right, very good. What is one of your favorite things that she's been in? Like a movie, or is it the SNL stuff, or what do you
It's
like?
the SNL stuff,
Okay.
definitely.
She is very funny. I caught it the other day. I caught a clip, something fed it to me, and it was like, the SNL characters like breaking character. I think those can be really, really funny. All right. Okay, so if you read books, what is the last book you read or listened to, and do you recommend it?
I do. Gosh, well, I can't think of the name of it because I listen to audiobooks, so I'm not all staring at the title. So, like 101 questions to ask yourself.
Oh,
I think it's
okay.
that. It's fantastic. I had to quit, stop, pause it often so I could really ingest the questions that were just asked, and I love it. Love that book.
Very good. They say, like, so I also listen to audiobooks, and every once in a while I'll find myself where I'm the printed book and the audiobook. There's that. Seems like an overabundance of copies of the books, to tell you the truth, but then they do it and you can like highlight things, and it's an
I
effective
have one
tool.
other book I want to tell you about
Tell,
because it's like
share,
an
share.
all-time favorite. It's called How to Be an Adult in Relationships. And it sounds very passive aggressive, but it's all about kinder self-language is what that book is. So instead of saying I've got a lot of baggage, I have a skill set that I needed when I was a child that I no longer need.
Yeah.
That book has been just life-altering for me as well.
That's a great suggestion. So that's about talking about yourself and not how to talk to necessarily other people in your relationship. Yeah, I do tell people this all the time. So like in my marriage early on, we were doing couples counseling, and anybody who's worked with me as coaching has heard this story because it comes up all the time. And they always tell you, they're like, use I statements, use I statements. And I thought I was doing that, but then it came out that I was like, I really think you're doing this wrong. And the therapist's like, that's not what we mean, Amy. Is not what we mean. Let's go back to the drawing board. I was like, oh, I have that wrong. It's not helpful. Okay. All right. That's it. Angel Rhode, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
This is so fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today.
I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.